Well, hello. My name is Nicole Block, and I am your host for Hints from HR. As you guys know, and you've been following the series, we speak to people in our industry about things that help people find our industry and maybe help get and find the best candidates for our industry. And we have two fantastic people that are going to share the supplier perspective for Hints of HR today. So before I introduce the panelists, I wanted to go through what a supplier partner is. So as you guys know, you might have heard the term, you know, operator and supplier. But the supplier partner, they are vital to our organization's health and success. They supply goods and services to support every facet of the apartment industry. And there's a wide variety, many types of companies, and so many career opportunities available that we definitely want to have our supplier partners chime in with their hints from HR. So as always, I have Becca Ramadi with us, the VP of TAAEF. She's my fantastic partner in crime. And then we also have Stephanie Naylor with Flooring Warehouse, and we have David Lindley with FSI. So I'm going to give each of them an opportunity to introduce themselves and kind of give you guys the backstory, and then we'll dive right in. So Stephanie, if you'd like to introduce yourself and kind of tell us a little bit about you and multifamily.
Absolutely. My name is Stephanie Naylor, and I'm with Flooring Warehouse, and I'm located out of Austin. We also have a division in Houston, and I've been in the multifamily industry for about 13 years. I love to hire and mentor and train people because I want to work with other fun people, hopefully. And one of my other passions is education. So thanks for having me on today, Nicole and Becca.
No, fantastic. And we look forward to your feedback. So David Lindley, would you like to also do the same?
Yeah. My name is David Lindley. I'm with FSI Construction. I've been in the industry about almost 10 years. Echoing what Stephanie says, I love working in this industry and with individuals within the industry. And so growing our team is something I'm passionate about, and education as well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as we discussed, you know, and we really want you, the job seeker, and then the people that are currently multifamily also to, you know, see this for yourself. But there are some differences as far as, you know, hiring for a supplier partner. But I think you'll find that there are a lot of parallels, things that we're looking for and approaches. Some of it you might find will be the same, which I think is also encouraging for our industry. But we'll start a little bit kind of stepping back to what you're looking for, you know, and what you're hiring for. So Stephanie, if you want to start by maybe talking about what you hire for and what you're looking for when someone's joining your team, and then we'll give David the opportunity to share the same.
Sure. So actually we're hiring right now. Like, we hire for all kinds of people. And I think you guys talked about it last week in your session that we really try to hire for a good attitude, somebody that will fit in well with our team. And then we figure we can train pretty much anybody, anything. No position that we have, whether it's in the warehouse, sales, marketing, accounting, we can't teach those skills. We can absolutely teach those skills. What we want to do is find the right people where we're the right fit for them too, right? So a lot of people out there could do the jobs necessary that we need them to do. It's really making sure that we're the right fit for them, that we're the right company and the right place for them to be. And that's what we really look for, is sort of a very good match to work with on a day-to-day basis.
So Stephanie, let me dig into that a little bit. So you mentioned that you hire for team dynamics and you want to make sure that they align with your company. You know, sometimes people use the term fit, but you know, what type of, you know, questions do you have? How do you get to the point to where you make sure that they are aligning with your company?
Yeah. So we ask them a lot of questions about themselves, right? So we're looking for what is their ideal workplace? Where are they looking to work? Where are they looking to grow? What do they want out of a job or a career to make sure that we're the right fit for them? So I always kind of say, like, our phone interview, like, we always start with a phone interview, and that's kind of where we determine whether or not they could work with us. Like, that's a pretty easy tell with some email communication and some phone communication. When they actually come in person, then we're asking more questions specifically about them and what they're looking for out of the workplace. As I mentioned, we can sort of train just about anybody to do anything that we need here at Flooring Warehouse. It's really whether or not they'd be happy here.
The phone screen, I think, is, you know, important because it kind of gets, like you said, those baseline things mm-hmm. done.
Right.
You know, we'll talk a little bit later about where you're finding the candidates, and there's times when you're going to need to have some sort of a screening, you know, process. So, so David, as far as, you know, trying to find the right fit, you know, what would you add to that, or how do you guys handle it at FSI?
I echo a lot of what Stephanie says. I mean, we want to make sure that what they're getting out of the workplace is something that we can offer them and that it's going to be a good fit. You know, I may offer some scenarios and get some feedback from them. But in addition to that, I really want to tell them about the organization and make sure that they're excited about the opportunity and what our brand and our values are. And when we have that kind of alignment, it seems to, you know, be a good way to connect. And also, you know, the expectation and whether that is in line with their values and what they want out of the workplace. We work a lot remotely. You know, we're running from jobs on a fixed location in most cases. So if that person can self-police or you know, is intrinsically motivated, they're going to be a good fit. There's not really a check-in every morning. So that's just one example of having that conversation and making sure that expectation is set.
Well, and setting the expectations is something we've talked about, you know, before, to make sure that they're understanding, especially if a job seeker is coming, you know, to us without experience truly in multifamily, to know what to expect, you know, at all. But I know on the supplier side, you know, to your point, you know, sometimes when someone's hiring to be on site as a leasing consultant, their job is going to be that daily check-in. They're going to have one or two places that they go to, you know, the vast majority of the time. And so the skill set to, as you say, self-police or to be autonomous and stay motivated and be successful in that environment is different than someone that's going to be going to an office. I know, like you, I think you mentioned when we talked before that, you know, you might have 13 or 15 people that work for FSI in an office, you know, like they actually go to the office to handle those types of things. But the vast majority of people that work with FSI are exactly what you just said. So setting those expectations ahead of time is going to be crucial, because if there's someone that needs that complete structure day to day, every day in the same office, which there are those types too, and that's valid, they just might not be the right fit.
And setting those expectations are so important, because you don't want someone to think their job is something other than it is, and then losing them and having to hire right, you know, right back into that circle again. So that's really important. We've talked about it quite a bit throughout this series.
About the hiring process, David brought up a really good point about setting expectations. And I know you guys have talked about it before, but whenever we do bring someone in for a personal interview, we have them talk to several people in the office in several different divisions. And the thing that we always ask people to tell is, what is the best part of working here in your job? And what is the worst part? So that way people really do, like, we try to lay it all out there on the table. Like, these are the salary expectations. These are the good, the really good parts of the job. And these are the really, sometimes the more difficult parts of the job, but we try to lay it all out there to try to make sure that candidate fit really works.
So, you know, so when you're setting those expectations, you know, David, and maybe you can speak to this, you know, with when you're sitting down and having that conversation with a candidate, you know, what do you share with them? I mean, you know, like Stephanie just said, hey, tell me about the best thing about this and the worst thing about this. You know, how do you set an expectation with the ice storm? Like, just share with us on that.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I think we have conversations about it. I mean, we, you know, the workload can ebb and flow. It can be a lot at some times with, you know, emergency work, and it has cycles, and it has a longer cycle sometimes of what we do. So, you know, the way I frame it is, there's times where you're super busy and that's to be expected, but there's the opposite of that. And, you know, that's not that we have tremendous downtime, but you might have less of a workload. So it's kind of a give and take to some capacity. And when it is a little slower, it's always like, enjoy that while it's there, because at any given moment we could have a freeze or, you know, multiple projects kick off at once. And then everybody's, you know, stretched a little bit, or it's time to go through another round of hiring, depending on those projects. So, you know, you just want to let them know that, you know, it could come at any moment. Especially with emergency work, you maybe get a late call for, you know, a fire or something of that nature. But they're, you know, hopefully far and few between, and we just need to be ready.
And so speaking a little bit to that, and David, we'll have you lead this one off, you know, finding the candidates, you know, we talk through, you know, where is everyone finding these candidates? Where are we finding how's a job seeker finding us, and how are we finding the job seeker in the most efficient way possible? So tell us about your, you know, I guess, process with that, David, and then we'll let Stephanie add that as well. But David, where are you finding your candidates?
Oh, we spoke about there being like two potential kinds of candidates. You know, one would be really targeted. You know, that may be someone that's going to have a very specific role. That's a very different approach. And we're talking kind of new to the industry or new to the field. You know, we're looking at referrals. We'll do online posts. You know, people who are typically new with the organization that are having a good experience may lend to have someone in their network come apply, or, you know, something like that. So a lot of referral, as well as a little online job boards and Indeed and things of that nature.
Stephanie, what about you? Where are you finding your candidates?
So like David mentioned, a lot of things come from referrals. Like hopefully we have a reputation of a fun and good laid back place to work. And then other people want to come and work here, like their friends or their family want to come work here. But when we don't have that resource available, or we've sort of exhausted all the resources that we have in the referral department, we do go look to online jobs boards like Indeed and ZipRecruiter.
Yes. And what about the, you know, the age old question? You know, we've had several staffing suppliers that have come on, and they said that sometimes with operators, when they're opening up a requisition, they say, oh, you know, we don't want any, they say they're going to hire, they open to hiring someone without experience, but then the first thing they ask for is experience whenever they're opening that requisition. David, how do you feel about hiring without experience? And I'll let Stephanie answer the same question.
Yeah, I believe that if we can teach what we do, construction is service at the core, communication. So we don't fear hiring without any experience. It's nice to have experience sometimes. I think we take a lot of things into account, who their direct report is going to be, the location they're in, the market factors, what's their support network there from a supply standpoint and an operation standpoint. And so if it lends itself to a good environment for someone with no experience, and we have, if we're slammed and we want to bring on someone with no experience, it's probably not the best time for it because we don't give them the attention they need. But if we have an opportunity, we find that those candidates typically work out really well and stay with us a long time.
That's great. What about you, Stephanie?
I think David brought up a really good point about the different markets. So like the market in Houston is probably much different from the market in Austin, or even just the people there are kind of different. So I think we are usually open to hiring without experience. I think David's point about also depending upon how busy you are, like we probably wouldn't bring somebody new on for some specific roles, say in July or August. That would be a very difficult time for them to start. And I always hate kind of having a new person come on board and kind of starting out on the wrong foot, and it kind of goes to that setting expectations. Like you want to be able to have the time to train and mentor any type of new hire with a reasonable amount of time, but we are absolutely open to hiring people without experience. And honestly, we have found a lot of great people without experience because then they don't have any sort of preconceived ideas about how things used to be done or how they used to be done in a different company. We can just sort of teach them sort of our ways of doing things.
No, absolutely a benefit. How do you guys build value then? So, so you have these candidates, or I think we had talked yesterday about potentially, coming from, and just because of the past year with the economy, we have lots of people in hospitality, lots of people in restaurant and retail that have been laid off or are looking to change industries just because of what's happened. How do you build value for, your position as far as, having them, address, hours and times and things of that nature? How do you guys, we'll start with David on that. How do you build value for them as a job seeker to help them find parallels, of course, and then kind of show them what's great about our industry?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the values, our organization's values being in line with theirs, but specifically to hospitality and retail, having a more balanced schedule, maybe a Monday through Friday in most cases, having holidays off. In some cases, they haven't had that in a number of years or potentially their whole professional career. So that's a very attractive thing for them. This is a great industry as a whole, and the stability of it, I feel like, we can use a lot of examples of, hey, this is a pretty permanent thing if you want it to be. To kind of a point earlier, when we're talking to a new candidate, we want it to feel like this could potentially be the last job they ever take or organization they ever work with. And we really want to be mindful on our side that we're giving them every option or ability to make that happen for them. But, we want to create that value as like, this is long-term and, these are the perks and it is steady and recession-proof to some degree. And right now specifically, I feel like that would resonate with anyone in hospitality or retail.
No, absolutely. Stephanie, what would you add to that?
I completely agree with everything he said. In addition, I think one benefit we have on the supplier side versus the owner operator side is that we can sometimes be a little bit more relaxed too. Like I tend to tell people I come to work in t-shirts, shorts, and flip-flops, and Becca can certainly testify to that, that this is like a fancy shirt for me, for you guys.
Well, thank you so much for putting on a fancy shirt and a green one at that. Thank you,
right,
Stephanie.
I wore a green shirt, a green fancy shirt. Everybody this morning was like, why are you dressed up? So, that happens. But
we noticed.
a relaxed environment. I brushed my hair too. So we have sort of more of a relaxed environment. Like David mentioned, it's a lot of times 9 to 5. Sometimes there are like some weekend work or some things where you have to pick up some extra time. But it is more of a relaxed environment where we are. And so we try to let people know that that's sort of a value that they can have. They don't have to be on their feet for 12 hours. Like if they're in retail or hospitality, hotel, you know, welcome desk or something like that, that we can actually offer a more relaxed environment.
Sure. And although, you know, you're supporting a facet of our industry that's more 24/7. So, you know, the operators do have their customers living with them all the time. So their on-call times could be, you know, a little bit more varied, whereas your customer is the operator. And so our business hours are traditionally in that 8 to 5, 6, you know, that 10 or 12 hour range, Monday through Friday, for the most part. Again, we can't speak to everything all the time, but I do think on the supplier side, you guys do offer that benefit as far as the hours and the time, because your customer is the operator, as opposed to the operator having the customer be the resident. So I definitely think that that's something that is a little bit different and that is worth talking about, especially to the job seeker who's trying to maybe find where they fit in. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the expectations and what you're looking for, and where we're finding these candidates. But I think that we should talk about the approach as far as we talked about screening and asking questions, et cetera. But I know, Stephanie, you know, we talked about, you know, kind of how you look at things, maybe even more use the word algorithm. But as far as the process for finding candidates, even though we're moving into a time where we're looking to potentially hire people, provided it's the right time. Let's talk about the process and how many candidates you're seeing and what that algorithm looks like. You know, again, I know it's not a science, but I think that what your thought was, what you mentioned to us was really interesting.
Sure. It's actually a book called Algorithms to Live By, and I highly recommend it if you're kind of a nerd like me and you've never met a spreadsheet that you don't love, then you will love this book because it's not really science. It's actually sort of applying math. The algorithm is specifically kind of called the optimal stopping problem. So it can be anything from hiring. It can be any or finding the best parking spot. Like the algorithm can be applied to many things in our lives, and it's fairly interesting. And right now, as we talked about earlier, since we were running very lean in COVID and now people are trying to hire, I think that sometimes our gut reaction or sort of our knee-jerk reaction is we go through sort of that screening process. And if anybody who's done that screening process, it can be tiring to kind of go through all those resumes, make all those phone calls, send all those emails. It can be exhausting. So when you finally meet like a person in person and you need to hire, you need a body in a chair or you need somebody to do something, the sort of the knee-jerk reaction is to immediately take maybe that first or second person that you meet, right? Because you're just so excited that they're a real body and they're ready to work. And you need that. You need that. The time is money. That's never been truer. Right. But really, according to this algorithm, the optimal percentage is 37%. So if you're looking at like to interview 10 candidates, you would sort of look after the fourth person, and it's called look and leap. So after the fourth person, you would just look for person 1 through 4. Then after that fourth person, whoever was better than any of those top four, those first four candidates, you would then leap and you would choose them. And that sort of gives you the optimal candidate when you do it that way, according to some math. And
yeah,
again,
according, it's fun TAAF doesn't, you know, endorse algorithms. No, I'm just kidding. But I think but it's interesting, you know, when we talk about hiring for desperation, you know, right? Because right now we're coming out of a desperate time. All of us are feeling the pinch in one way or another. And this is our opportunity to get it right. And so I think that what you had shared with us, what resonated with me was that you want to see what the baseline is. You know, you want to see what is out there. And if you're interviewing 10 candidates, at least run through 4 of them or 5 of them before you can see, again, is that person a superstar or is there truly more out there? I think that's really interesting. When you mentioned that, we are all raw. We are all stretched thinner than we've ever been stretched. And so, you know, my fear as an industry is that once we kind of have that green light again, that we're going to make some mistakes along the way because we're going to come out of this like very aggressively and out of desperation. So I think that's definitely something to, you know, to talk through. But I think that I think that your point is valid, you know, as far as it's, you know, you're still following, you know, the same process as anyone, you know, really is on the operator or supplier side. What about you, David, as far as like the interview, you know, you mentioned that whenever we talked before, that you really want to make sure that person is a good fit and that you have a kind of a mentor mentee type relationship. But let's talk career path, you know? So I think that that's important. I think one of you mentioned that, you know, I think it was David, that you're looking for something that, you know, this could be a career forever, which everybody on this call are lifers. So I think we can attest to that. But David, let's talk about the career path at FSI, you know, and how you explain that to candidates.
FSI is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, which is kind of cool. One of the things that, speaking to career paths, you know, we talked about really sharing the brand with the candidate and making sure that they're excited and they fit in, but also speaking to some specific examples of when, you know, we were able to move one of our team members to another state that they had wanted to go to, or an example of an individual who started in position A and now works in position D. And so that they recognize that we do. So it's important that they know that we do promote from within and that we do invest in our team members and how that aligns with the service and the mentoring, because their direct report will impact how their, you know, those expectations are set. So the clientele, what are their expectations in that particular market or for that particular role? And is this person going to seamlessly fit into it? I think if we feel like it's going to be effortless for that candidate, then they'll have the most success and the most enjoyment from their position. And that's what we want them to have ultimately.
No, absolutely. And I think Stephanie brought this up too, is that, you know, you mentioned clientele, you know, some suppliers are location based, where you know, you support Austin or you support Houston. Some suppliers are management company based. You support ABC management and XYZ management, which are going to have two totally different perspectives and things that they want to focus on. You know, and Stephanie, is there anything else that you would share as far as career path and how you guys discuss that whenever you're hiring someone?
Sure. I think we sort of say, and I think one of the great benefits of the industry in general, but also in being a supplier, is that we're sort of like a mini corporate office, essentially. So we have accounting, we have marketing, we have warehouse, we have cleaning, we have sales, we have admin, we have lots of different positions. And it's really, we always tell people, you know, kind of come in and learn sort of the whole business and then decide where you want to fit. We've had people go from the warehouse into sales. We've had people go from cleaning into warehousing and into retail. So there's lots of different places. I really want to hear, though, if we have time, I want to hear David's career path, because there was an adjective used to sort of describe his kind of funky career path. And I would love to sort of hear it and for him to share kind of his interesting career path.
Before we go there, I think it's really important. So, I mean, you just listed off all those different types of jobs, and not just within one company. And when you think about all the different goods and services that it takes to run an apartment community, that's a huge number of opportunities out there.
Absolutely.
So we really wanted in this episode, really wanted to highlight all the opportunity and diversity and different types of jobs and companies out there, from your pool companies, your flooring companies, your construction, your furniture rental, your staffing. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so I think it's really important for folks to take a look at what's out there. And
sure,
whether it's on Indeed or looking at the TAA Career Center on TAA.org. I mean, there's so many opportunities out there, and we want you to come and play with us and join us. So I think this is a good way to...
David, you want to take just a minute to highlight kind of, you know, where you've been and what you've done, just, you know, very quickly in the cities and all the places that you cover is interesting. You take a minute or so and let us know, and then we'll wrap up with some housekeeping ideas.
Sure. Well, I want to say too, that this industry is so full of opportunity, and you do get out what you put in, and the different types of companies out there. I mean, there's companies that are startups or feel like startups, or, you know, that are really small, and there's tons of growth opportunity, and there's larger companies with tons of positions. And so whatever your appetite is, this industry is going to offer it, specifically on the supplier side because of the different goods and services. But I started out on-site maintenance, and I did that on a 1,500 unit property for about a year and a half, and wanted to get on the supplier side. I had that opportunity actually in flooring. I did that for just under 2 years and got a call from Mr. Tony Whitaker and joined the FSI team here in Houston as a sales rep. And within a few years, took a national approach, and we started growing some markets on the West Coast. And I currently now oversee our national sales team, in addition to still working with the other states. And I'm proud to say we're 15 states maybe now, and it's been an incredible journey. And you know, as we see that opportunity, we go get it, and it's a perfect fit for me. So I love what I do, and I'm super grateful for my, you know, this organization and all my team members. And I think that's out there for everyone. It's a great example of that.
And I would say one thing with David, every time I talk to him, he's in a different city or state or something, and with a unique opportunity. But I would say that it resonates with everyone is that he definitely goes where the challenge is and he goes where the opportunity is. I know we don't always have the flexibility to do all of that, but I will say that that's been, I think, what keeps his, you know, his career and his role interesting, you know, because he definitely, so thank you so much, you know, Stephanie and David, for your time. You guys are so valuable, and I just enjoyed this time we spent together. Bye guys. See you soon.
Bye.